Honorable Hill Lewis, Honorable Liyenge, Honorable Tali, right, is there anyone else? No. Honorable McPherson, that's it. Can we then start with yourself?
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the presenters. Okay, firstly on the lotto, I've got quite a few issues, some comments, so I'll just go through them relatively quickly. As far as I know, there has not been a request, a call for applications in 2014. There has been? No, I thought not. Which really makes it difficult for organizations to to plan their multi-year programs. Now this is a debate that we had in the committee while we were writing the legislation, but really it's important for serious professional non-profit organizations which deliver crucial community services to be able to plan on a multi-year basis. So it makes it very difficult when there's, you know, for some reason, and I can't find any public statement by the NLB to say why there's no call for applications. I may have not been able to find it, but it seems like every few years there's just a year that's skipped. So I'd just like to know why that is. Then on the NRGP, I must say I was a little bit disappointed with the numbers on the NRGP. There's 1,800 calls a year. That's about 5 phone calls a day, which is not very high. I mean, you know, one person could handle 5 phone calls a day easily. So I agree with the professor that a lot more needs to be done to get the NRGP services out there and known in the gambling community and to problem gamblers. And I also have a concern about the revenue. If you look at the figure in that slide of 17.5 million, that would suggest that gross gambling revenue is 1.75 billion. But if you look at the revenue figures of some of these companies who are listed companies, some of them are listed, it's much, much more than that. I mean, even you know, one company is more than that. So where is that? How is that revenue calculated? And who is making sure that those revenue figures are actually correct? Then on bingo terminals, I must say, the proliferation of bingo halls around the country is as a direct result of the delay in regulation. They have, opportunists have moved in to fill that gap because there has been a regulatory gap for several years. And now if you go to shopping centres in PE, you can play bingo in a shopping centre in the middle of the day, no problems, no limitations, open to everyone. And so that is a big problem, but the root of the problem is actually the very long delay that we've had in regulating them correctly. On LPMs, there is still in many of the provinces, there is still a difference between the number of authorized LPMs and the number that have actually been rolled out. And I would motivate very strongly that the number that is currently rolled out be capped, and that those additional machines not be allowed to be rolled out, because if you really want to identify a destructive form of gambling in communities, it's that gambling which takes place in restaurants, in pubs, in shebeens, and those are your LPMs. Then just a question on how many times has the National Gambling Policy Committee met this year? How many times has it met? And the reason I ask that is because the coordination of policy and the coordination of the application of the Act among the provinces is a major problem. It's something that Professor De Vries alluded to. There is arbitrage taking place between the provinces, and the mechanism that's supposed to sort that out is the National Policy Committee, and secondly obviously the National Board. So I'd like to just know how many times that committee has met, and is it being effective? Is it doing its job? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Liyenge.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me first appreciate the presentation, Chairperson. but also with an emphasis of saying at least the board's chairpersons and CEOs must present on their achievements and challenges, so that the department is able to speak on its role over these organizations. Because if it's going to be the DDG alone speaking on behalf of all of them, then it becomes a lot of contradictions coming up. Because the CEO was saying, was speaking on the turnaround time to respond to applications, where she was saying it's something of the past, it's no longer happening. The CEO justified that to say it is because of the volume of work that they have. So I think, Chair, we need also to get the list of projects that have been funded by the organizations in order that we can, in execution of our duties, see the impact on our own. So if we can get that in the near future, maybe you might not have that now, but when we come back, we need that information in order that at our constituency level, we can visit these institutions. On the lottery, the 34% that is actually provided by DTI, I mean, no, no, two. The 34% is from DTI, from the operator. Okay. Then for the proceeds, what actually happens with the proceeds that you receive? Because there is no report that says in the economy this is the manner in which we have contributed. Then lastly, Chair, the applications that were there, not necessarily the master list, because I happened to be engaged in one of the organizations in Mthatha for street children, children working on the streets in 2012. Up until now, that organization was never responded to, even the acknowledgement was received, and seemingly the project number that was provided is not legitimate according to the official when I was trying to engage on this, but it needs investigation even after this. So those are the aspects. The horse racing issue. Where do you locate the horses that we have in the rural areas? We also engage them through sports in solo on yearly basis. There are three races that we have there, but you'll find that we have our normal traditional short horses, you know, and then those who have some money, they will go to Gauteng and Durban, buy the big ones. Then you can see that the playing field is not level when some are using the shorter ones and then the other one are using the big ones. So you can't compare, we can't see a race of donkeys and horses. Is there any applications that you might have received from those communities? Because they can make money also out of their own, because they are investing in those horses, short as they are. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mthali.
Thanks, Chair. I just have one question. You spoke of yourselves as catalyst for social upliftment, which is a very good thing, you know, to helping communities. But I want to understand whether you are able to make an assessment of the impact, the negative impact of the new things that are being introduced to communities that were not exposed to these forms of gambling before. There is a casino built, people start to go there. The DDG was saying that in some other instances you find people having organized themselves in a form of a group and you get a hire a bus, obviously, because they might not be owning that particular bus and going to Campbell, 20 or 50 kilometers away from their communities, or even 5 or 10 kilometers. I don't know how far they come from to arrive at that gambling spot. That type of a conduct, if they consistently do that, obviously it should be impacting in a very negative manner in their own communities or at home. Like I was told of a story of a lady who said that she's going to London, but she was spending a week in carousel gambling, even asking people to bring her extra clothes because the ones she had with her there must be changed. While you know the upliftment is appreciated, but at the same time there's this other side, whether you are able to monitor that and try and intervene without having to wait for somebody to call to say there is a problem with our neighbor who seems to be a perpetual gambler. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mtali. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Just a few questions. On the Liquor Act, I just want to focus in on enforcement and interaction with communities. As I understand now that the community police forums and the SAPS are involved, and that there should be a liquor office that relates to the liquor board in each police station, and what the interaction between the liquor board, the CPS and police is like at the moment. Because I used to be a ward councillor before I got elected, and I know from the particular area that I came from that the interaction between the liquor boards, national, provincial, and the local communities is problematic at the best of times. And what steps are you taking to improve that? Because it's particularly concerning that legislation is being enacted that outlets that's are selling liquor should not be in the proximity of schools, religious organisations. Yet applications are still being granted.
Just a minute, McPherson. We're not dealing with liquor, only with the gambling at the moment. That's the National Lotteries Board and gambling. We are still to get the liquor presentation.
Sorry, Chairperson, then you'd excuse because I wasn't here, so I assumed that it had been done. So please accept my apology. Then let me move on to gambling. I'd just like to get an update on Greyhound Racing. I'm getting a lot of phone calls and emails, particularly from activists, animal rights activists on that issue. And is there a position from the department on that, and where do you foresee going? And then also, I've been told that there is a proposal by the KZN Gambling Board to introduce another 32 bookmaking licenses in the province. That seems like an extraordinary amount of bookmaking licenses to introduce into one particular province. And my concern is that flooding the market with bookmaking licenses like that undermines the industry and undermines businesses already, and I just want to get your thoughts and what knowledge you have on that particular issue. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honourable McPherson. I just have two questions for the Gambling Commission and Gambling Board, and really need to find out. I'm not a promoter of gambling, but if we are going to have it in the country and it is going to be regulated, Then clearly there are machines that are required for these operations. And at one stage, all these machines were being imported, and we were told about the challenges in manufacturing them, till we heard Zimbabwe were even manufacturing them. Now, what sort of challenges do we have that we can't manufacture? But it may have been you've not addressed that issue. And if you have addressed the issue, where are they manufacturing these machines, and how are they being implemented? The second thing that we raised, and I didn't hear a reference to it, in these casinos, which at one stage it would appear that there was a preference for that. It was quite clear that all casinos should offer facilities where younger children could be kept far away from the ringing of these machines, because that is a subliminal impact on them. And later on in life, they've only got to hear a bell of sorts to think they're gambling. It's not a very healthy atmosphere. And for children with families come in to gamble, and they walk straight past the casino operations. And I'm not sure how that's supposed to be promoting a healthy lifestyle for the young children as well. The third thing is related to the buses, which have already been mentioned, I believe. And that is, it would appear as if you're helping the pensioners because you're providing them with a bus to go gambling. I don't know, it's very much a yes and a no issue. So I think that one needs to look at that much more carefully. The final point in this is, certainly with, they say gambling is an addiction and so on, but the one thing it doesn't appear to be is to be a biological addiction, such as drugs and alcohol. It seems to be more along the lines of Pavlova's dog, where you know the bell goes and you think, I'll gamble. I don't know. And I think we've got to do a lot more work in that direction as well. So if you take over some of these particular issues. But before you respond, I would like to say thank you to Honorable Matiasi for being here during, I think, one or two of our meetings, that you have been here to ensure that your colleague and comrade does get the information that has been processed. Thank you very much. Welcome back, Honourable Shilapa. Right, there is going to be a second bank of questions, but will you respond now?
Chair, I will allow the CEOs and the chairperson to respond to the questions that are directly related to them. Before I do that, Chair, I must just indicate that obviously the brief that we have was to just give the committee an overview of the mandate of the DTI, and then which then links to the work of the agencies as the implementing arm. Chair, we are hopeful that the committee is going to allow us an opportunity for each of the entities to be able to then talk to the committee about their work fully, then so that then you can interact directly with their work. Often that happens, during their quarterly reporting, the committee would indicate which committees it would like to see. So we're hoping for that opportunity, because certainly in the period that we have, it's not possible to cover all of the work of these entities. We're just giving an overview just so that the members, especially because of the new committee, that they have a sense of the mandate. But we do take the point that the information might not be enough in the time that we have. So Chair, I'll just give to the CEO of the NLB just to talk to the question, especially around the call. And also some of the questions that have been raised that might relate to the NLB. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, Deputy Chair, Honourable Members. Let me start with the last question. In terms of the issue that was raised by Honorable Matale, I think the vision refers to that of the National Lotteries Board, but the information in terms of what you were saying relates directly to the Gambling Board. So I will leave that for the Gambling Board to respond to. The issue of supplying a list of projects to the committee, that we will do, Chair. I would just like to inform the Honourable Member that on an annual basis, as we release our annual report, there is a requirement that all the projects that would have been funded in that financial year are made public. But in addition to that, we do have all the information in terms of which organisation has been funded since inception to date. So we will make that information available in addition to the information that you actually get from the annual report. The issue on the NLB not having gone out on a call last year, we did go out on a call. It was the ACTS call. The closing date was in April the 18th. We received 2,000 applications. And given what is usually asked for in that sector, we ended up with a situation where some of the projects had to be adjudicated in the current financial year because necessarily the budget had actually, you know, been depleted given the number of projects that were funded in that year. The sports call was in 2012, November, okay, and we received 4,000 applications. That has been adjudicated. We are in the process of going out on a call. Hopefully, this coming week, we'll be going out on a sports call. For charities, also, the closing date would have been in December 2012, so it's almost 2013, and that's where we received 7,700 applications. And the same thing that happened to the arts corps, to the arts sector, happened to the charities. Given the number of applications, you know, towards the end of the financial year, the budget had been exhausted, so they needed to wait for the new financial year, and they will also be going out on a call this year. Yes. Thank you.
Raise your hand, but go ahead.
I think one of our responsibilities of oversight is to gauge you on your progress in what you're doing. Do you have a backlog of, as of now, of applications that you have not responded to? Because I heard you saying you have that backlog because of the number of applications that you receive. Opposed to what the DG had said, that is a story of the past. So what shall we be oversighting exactly? What is the current situation?
Right, next time we'll do follow-ups. We're not going to have dialogue. We must have follow-up questions. So, but we'll allow it this time because things are still new. Go ahead, Ms. Mampani.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I didn't see or understand what the DG said to have been a contradiction. The DG was talking about...
DDG.
DDG, I'm sorry. Spoke about what would have happened previously where there was no communication and it took forever for the applications to be adjudicated. In terms of what I presented, the backlog that I referred to is in relation to these figures that I'm presenting. To give you a sense of the number of applications that we received, for instance, in December 2012 and where we are now. So you know, you could regard that as a backlog, because if everything was equal, we were supposed to have finished that in one financial year.
Chairperson. Chairperson.
Honourable Shibanga, I've just warned other members. We don't want a dialogue. I want to see if Honourable DD, if the DDG has completed, then I'm coming straight to you. Have you completed, DDG?
No, we have not completed, Chair. We were hoping to respond to all of the questions. We started with the NLB, and then now we'll come to the NGB. Then I will then talk to the issues that we as the department can respond to. And then, yes.
Challenges that members want to actually tackle on the NLB. So let's get through to the gambling quickly, the other form of gambling.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I will begin with the first question on the low response rate of participation in the National Responsible Gaming Program's 0800 number. I think by its very nature, it only speaks to the people who have access to both telephones and all of the things. So it makes a number of assumptions. Just in there, I want to just say it received the international award last year as one of the best practice models in the world about how to deal with responsible gambling. However, the limitations have been addressed, and I think not fully, but I want to just report on some of the work we think is quite significant, and it will be reported on in the coming financial year. The number of workshops with young people and people in communities. And for the first time, the dependency on the awareness of the on the awareness campaigns was not only linked to our 0800 number, but to workshops, and we called it our Y generation workshops, in provinces such as Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest. For Youth Month, it was in the Northern Cape, and tomorrow, as we speak, will be in Free State. And I've seen some of the recordings of the data around those things, and clearly the and some of the research that was also completed indicated people did not know about the 0800 number, so there's not enough awareness around it. So it's not good enough that it's just on the machines and the various places that they are. You must look at other ways to access this diverse population of South Africa, and I think that's really the issue, that the population of South Africa asked for a variety of ways that we create awareness within. So I think those workshops, we have reports about that, very good interactions with young people and people from the communities, and they have learned, they've become the champions about creating awareness around it. On the matter of the GGR, that seems to be low in relation to the high profitability of many of the companies that are listed, most of them are listed in. Remember, the gross gaming revenue comes on top. It's properly monitored, you know. So as and it's audited across the country by all the provincial compliance units around whether that which has been gambled and the taxes is related to this. However, remember, there's in gambling, in the gambling sector, the industry players are taxed two ways. One is the gross gaming revenue, and the second one is through normal business tax. So their contribution we must look at when we look at their profitability, that the normal business tax is therefore also linked to that. So the contribution is not only GGR, but also through the way they pay taxes and all the other various legislated forms of their contribution to the country. Then in terms of the bingo terminals, I think we note your concern, and I think the DGG has indicated that clearly this is one of the things on the agenda for that the regulatory framework be in place so that we can address it sooner than later around the proliferation of bingo and how it currently is being implemented across the country. It is a matter of concern. On the question of horse racing, that speaks to, if I may, I think is the issue. The council met last year, twice, but we had meetings called, I think, four times in terms of its mandate, but, you know, being quoted. So our minister has been there, but chairpersons would be there, but it's not properly if all of the MECs across the country can't attend. So I think that's the meetings have not necessarily been quoted, but we did have two formal meetings. On the matter of horse racing, and particularly traditional horse racing or trotting horse racing, whatever it's called, I think it's a very interesting contribution to the horse racing fraternity and also to the, and that's why our argument around the regulatory framework is so critical, so that the horse racing authority don't only look after the horses that have very high stakes, but also that there's a framework that allows the developmental process of that which traditionally happens in communities does take place. So I know that in KZN there, the big Dundee race, and I have heard a student actually did a PhD, I think, on a very interesting, these traditional races in the Eastern Cape around it. So we are very open to hear and share and learn more about that, so that, and we're arguing for that to be part of the regulatory framework. In terms of the matter of the illegals and the social impact, I know it was addressed to the NLB, but it really, I think, rubbed over into the National Gambling Board's oversight role. There's two things I think I must make a point of. Every legalized mode of gambling, whether it's limited payout machines, casinos, are properly monitored. And there's quite an extensive process around both participation of local communities. There must be public hearings, particularly around limited payout machines. And I think there's a need for greater awareness, particularly that people understand what does it mean to be an active citizenry. But I think we mustn't deny the impact of those things on families, as you correctly stated. And I want us just as a house to note that informal gambling, and we talked about FAFI and illegal gambling. In fact, most, if I look at the statistics on the illegal gambling and how the initiative from the National Gambling Board in partnership with the provinces around both forfeiture, but that the convictions are so low, clearly speaks that the various agencies don't speak to one another properly. So somebody can pay a fine and go and open another one again. And we have a number of those cases, so we're very concerned about it, because we think the illegal sites are not properly monitored. They are not. I mean, there's no regulatory framework. They don't contribute to our fiscus, and sometimes we have a, you know, and there's a whole, we have a substantive position paper on the illegal gambling issue, and we would like to share that at the appropriate time even further. But I can just say that I think the matter of having a community prepared about when you have such a gambling site, whether it's a casino or limited payout machine, or whether it's a bingo hall around it, real partnerships with community leaders, whether it's your church-based organizations or other, and I know that's one of the areas the Responsible Gaming Program is trying to roll out to educate, particularly so that we address, and there's a need for greater education around both the negative impact of gambling and that it must be dealt with responsibly. We talked about the need for us to have proper further research on animals, the issue around greyhound racing. It has been highlighted in the Gaming Review Commission.
For a moment, you're talking of these greyhound buses that are actually racing.
So I think just to say that clearly that's an area that will have the attention and need proper research as we go along. I think the concern of McPherson is particularly the concern around KZN and the potential proliferation of a number of bookmaker licenses, the additional 32. Now, I want to place it within context. KZN Gambling Board has a mandated responsibility to ensure some of the government imperatives are adhered to, such as black economic empowerment, transfer of skills, and in areas where particularly in the bookmaking fraternity, largely it has been representative of a particular political racial group. So I know since the board has particularly had that as their agenda, that there's transformation that needs to take place in the bookmaker fraternity. And I wanted to say they are large. I thought it's little small places. They are actually substantial family-owned businesses where parents are in for generations in it, and they are definitely profitable. But transformation, because they say, how can you expect me to take an additional partner in it? So if you can't force people to have a partner in their business, then the issue must be then, instead of having one person having 10 different sites, to then say, how do we control and monitor and address some of the issues around transformation in the country? And I think that particularly is the agenda of the KZN Gambling Board on the bookmaker licenses. That's the... In terms of Chairperson, I'm coming to your questions that you've raised, and that's a very important question if we take into account both the State President's current address for this administration and the DTI imperatives in terms of the current budget speech about localization, local content, and we're very pleased to say that particularly the partnership and the support of DTI in the Western Cape in Atlantis, we have now, and you know Atlantis is one of the areas that was previously one of those decentralized zones and have unemployment that's extremely high and factories closed down, but they currently a very unique partnership around manufacturing, very high, I think it's a partnership with Germany, but local content and local manufacturing here in the Western Cape, and we're excited to see the results. And clearly then in terms of process, and the provinces do the licensing conditions and local content, but if you have machines here, clearly the if it's cheaper, if it's the same, it's better, then that must be part of the licensing conditions. And remember, all licenses are renewed regularly, so it always gives regulators an opportunity to make it current and speaking to the current issue around the country. So I think the particularly that one around the slot machines, whether it's in the LPMs or the casinos, is a critical, exciting initiative. I think it took a bit long, but it is here, so it's happening in the Western Cape through the DTI initiative on local content manufacturing. I just want to say in terms of the National NSEMS Central Monitoring System, that the National Gambling Board were calling for proposals. Clearly, we also took into account issues such as job creation, local content, skills transfer, so that even that speaks to the priorities of the current government and the country at large. I think the concern around casinos, and I always think back and think casinos were very innovative, said it's a destination, so it offers not only such as bingo halls. I think the big criticism to bingo is that it's just a bingo hall. It doesn't comply with any of the prerequisites of infrastructure development, not accessible through shopping centers and so forth, around a number of those things. But the casinos, therefore, as a destination, has got entertainment, maybe museums, movie house, and ice skating, you name whatever. And so the children comes with families there. And I think that's always a matter of concern, that if the entrances and the access of children and families is so that they come past the casino hall, they're exposed to it. And so the issue is, can you design, I mean, every one of the provinces considered the bids, but it's about how the entry places don't expose our children when they come as a family to these events, you know, if it's ice skating in the Western Cape or whether it's boxing in KZN or arts and culture in one of the other provinces, because each one of the contributions of these casinos are phenomenal. If we start tracking their contributions to arts, culture, sport, each one of them uniquely made a contribution to each one of the areas they located. But it does mean families and children come there, frequent the restaurants, frequent the movie houses, frequent all of those things, and it's about how we address the fact that they don't get exposed to the casino floors and all of those things. And then I think you raise the issue around buses that comes, and that's why I think early in my comment on the international, the South African Responsible Gaming Foundation's work, and specifically to have it rolled out into communities, means that you have community leaders understanding that if you partner with, and many of them is old people that take the day out with their church communities and they go to the casino for a meal and all of those things. So then those leaders must be equipped and understand what does it mean around responsible gaming? Do they understand what it means? Can they counsel? All of those things. So I think we're going into a new phase, particularly to address that area. I think your question on addiction, saying it's not biological, there's very, very interesting research at this moment, and we don't know if I use the word right, it's comorbidity. Remember, I'm not a biological scientist, but in the Western Cape, for instance, and this is part of the research that's currently coming out, it was funded research by the South African Responsible Gaming Foundation about seeing is somebody that's addicted, some of our pathological gamblers, do they have any other addiction? It seems so. In the Western Cape profile, because the treatment centres here, they could not find somebody that wasn't addicted either to alcohol or drugs and addicted to gambling. So actually, clearly there's this talk about the comorbidity of addiction, and there's very interesting research currently around that. We clearly there's some substantive work being done, and I think we've just globally, addiction of gambling and addiction has been classified also, the pathological gambling, as one of these health areas to be addressed through medical councils. So I think that's quite phenomenal work that's around. We are on the cutting edge of it as a country, and I want to just say that we could provide you with some of the very fascinating research into that area. I hope that
answered all the questions. Thank you. Chair, I'll just wrap up on some of the policy issues. In my earlier presentation, I did indicate that we will be processing through Cabinet policy proposals that will then give us an opportunity to close on the issues of online gambling, electronic bingos, as well as the issues around animal racing. I did indicate that instead of looking just specifically, you know, at Greyhound, the number of proposals around other forms of animal racing. So there needs to be a policy decision around that, so that then we can then provide the certainty for the industry in terms of whether these things are going to be allowed going forward. Chair, the reason why a gambling review process was undertaken, it was as a result of the concern that was raised by this parliament to say that there is proliferation, and I think there is also a piecemeal approach to authorization of new gaming activities and so forth. And in the gambling review report, they did recommend also that the issue around informal racing of those short horses should also be considered, because it's something that is happening, you know, your bush racing as well. So those are the things that are happening, and if they can be brought into the space, if we are looking at regulating horse racing in general, then they should be brought into that space. So the policy document will be published for comment as soon as Cabinet has approved it. It will be taken through that process, and there will be an opportunity to make comments on the draft document before the final position is adopted. So, Chair, on that one, I think it will address some of the issues of uncertainty around that. And in regards to the issue of manufacturing, I think the chairperson has addressed that, but it is important that as a department, we continue to see in various industries machines that are fully imported, where they are not fully imported, you know, it's just components maybe that can be assembled in the country. So there is a drive to encourage localization, you know, local manufacturing and all that. And like the chairperson has said, we're happy now that over all this period, we didn't have a manufacturing plant for gambling machines in the country. And this is one of them that we're happy to see a lot of good performance in that space. This is also linked, Chair, to the lifespan of these machines as well, and also the level of demand. So, setting up a plant is linked to those issues. But we can see that at least there seems to be some appetite to get into that business in South Africa. Chair, the other thing that I thought I should just allude to, which has been raised by Honourable Hill Lewis around the National Gambling Policy Council. Chair, the council will be meeting in this quarter. There is a meeting that is already being set up for this quarter. In terms of the statute, they should at least have a minimum of two meetings. So what we normally do is to scatter the meetings to ensure that when we meet, there are things that the council should be approving. But there were challenges that were raised before in the gambling review around just the structure and the effectiveness of the council as a council that should be giving direction to some of these issues. Chair, I'll stop there. And then in regard to just the National Lotteries Board, I know that there are specific maybe incidents.
Just on that one, yeah. DDG, if I can ask you to hold, because the EFF particularly wanted to raise some questions in that regard, and I don't want you to conclude it. Honourable Shivamba?
Thanks,
Shivambua, apologise.
Thanks, Chair. In the meeting which we held on the 11th of July, where the NEF spoke, we said to the NEF that they should submit the list of all the recipients of the monies that they allocate. And they made a commitment to submit that by Tuesday, the 15th of July. We have not received that. Now, I think we need to make the same request to the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund that could be given the list of all the recipients of the monies that you give people there, so that we can verify that it's really for the good causes and the recipients are people who deserve to be given that money. That will be the oversight that we'll be conducting. I'm sure you have that information at your disposal and you can be able to give us that information. And it should be to say that these are the recipients. This is where they are, their actual address and their contact number, so that we can be able to get our structures on the ground to verify those things. Because the big figures of 2 billion rand distribution and everything else can just be mentioned there, but we do not know what actually has been expended on. So we need to be given that information. And Omar, the chair is not concentrating. Yes.
It's your issue as well, because apparently this list was issued, and I can't understand why people haven't got it.
Yeah. So we need to have that list with their contact numbers and everything else, and then the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund should do the same thing of giving us the list of all their recipients, at least over the past financial year, so that we can be able to deal with verification issues. Then we'll talk after that in terms of whether the regulations have been complied to. Thanks.
I just want to ensure that I'm clarified. This list is the NEF beneficiaries. This is the National Empowerment Fund. I just want to make sure I heard
that. Yes, in the last meeting we agreed that the NEF should give us the list of all their beneficiaries. We need to get the NEF list of beneficiaries, but now we should get the list as well of the National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund, so that we have a space to conduct oversight. We're going towards the 2 week recess now. If we can have that before we leave, we'll be able to give to our members to say they must go and check if those projects are really existing and how they got to benefit out of that.
Right. Just to clarify that for the DDG as well. Apparently we have received this in terms of the committee. When I say committee, I mean the committee secretary.
And that's why I was just sending him an SMS to say, have you distributed this list to members? That's the NEX list. All right, so we'll get that information now. It has been sent to us. Of that I am reliably informed. When it comes to the NLB, it is most unfortunate that you're coming on this Friday because we close on this Friday. And that is going to mean, if you don't have it right here where you can send it to us electronically, then it would need to come on Monday so we can electronically send it along to all the members as we are doing with program changes and the lot. So I hope that that is very clear. We're talking about two lists, and it was just a reference to something that you would not be involved in. Is this also an NLB issue, Honourable?
Just a two-finger on that, Chair. I'm just on the NLB website now, and the full list up to the end of June 2014 is actually available on their website. And it also includes the amount that was paid to each organisation and the project application number.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hill Lewis. I wasn't aware we actually had a third committee secretary, but it's extremely helpful. What we're going to do with that, now, seeing as it is clear, it means one phone call to your office, Miss Naidu, will get us this list. Because it's here. So it means pulling it, printing it. The challenge with some members of parliament is that not everyone has printing machines, not everyone has got equipment yet, and I must make that clear, not everyone. So it means although Honourable Hill Lewis is one of the fortunate ones with this phone, mine has been in a firebombing of sorts, I can't extract it. So I want the department, yes it's there, but not everyone has got access to electronic, that's all I'm saying. Honourable
Chivamba,
I hope you're not repeating what I'm saying. Thank you. Go.
Chair, can we please be given the list by NEF and by the NLB of all their recipients with their contact details and where those projects are so that we can be able to conduct the and not try to act level like the D is doing, please.
No, that's why I was just saying, well, these things are always helpful, but we have asked for them, and the commitment you will get from them, extracted by myself. If possible today, this will be with us, if not, on Monday. And we do need this. And if Ms. Naidu can just convey, if we don't have that other list, we want that, because we wanted this to be ready for constituency. I keep on saying that. That's what we're going to be doing, all of us, oversight. And it is important that we have that, Honourable Shivambu. We totally agree with you. Please don't misunderstand. We do. Now, there are some members who've made certain urgent requests. Now, where we are is, in a way, you've had the response. You know, we'll get it. So, what we'd like to do now, DDG, is you to wrap up the gambling and then we're going to go straight into the alcohol. Have they brought a table with their best alcohol here? Go ahead. Listen, I'm closing this off so the DDG can respond on gambling.
I do have a follow-up question that is quite pertinent to the racing licenses for KZN.
They have some urgent ones on horse racing. Allow her to conclude and our questions will go to them in writing. Because this is a short meeting. Right. Now when it comes, I have received this. I was in the middle of writing you both a little note. So please, you'll get my note right now, Honourable Muntush. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot. Just to wrap up on the National Lotteries, I think we should note the concerns that are being made or raised by the honourable members, especially around specific projects that may have been applied for and maybe where there isn't feedback. And I think the CEO and the executive responsible for grant funding will go back and look into that. But Chair, we keep the statistics of all of the grants that have been awarded, and we will provide that list today electronically, and if there's additional information, we will then provide it on Monday. But just in terms of the issue we spoke about earlier around the turnaround times and that there's still maybe challenges there, we never said there are no challenges. We indicated that previously we had a problem where the just application to get a response on whether you're getting a grant or not used to take even 2 years at some point. And so now the systems that have been put in place just in terms of ensuring that there is a seamless process have allowed us to reduce that turnaround time. And there may be specifics that could be problematic, and the CEO's office at all times, they do deal with those applications where there may be problems, where stakeholders do call, and those are being resolved on an ongoing basis. So those improvements do not mean that everything is perfect, I've indicated, and we'll continue to ensure that the NLP improves on those issues. Chair, with your permission, I would like to then move into quickly just the alcohol area. On the issue of alcohol, Chair, I must say just upfront, just the legal framework for that. This is a concurrent competence between the national and the province. In respect of the provinces deal with the retail part of it. That is all the licenses that are being issued to the outlets such as your taverns, your pubs, bars, and so forth. Those are the people that sell directly to the public. The provinces are responsible for dealing with those licenses. And similarly, at the provincial level, they are also having the competence to license the micro manufacturers as well in the provinces. And then at the national office, what we are responsible for is to just oversee the area around distribution. So the distribution licenses will come from that area, as well as licensing of the macro manufacturers. And I will just show you the figures in terms of how much we're talking about. There's still a challenge, though, just in getting all the full figures of the market, in a sense that we try and coordinate on a quarterly basis the figures of the licenses that are being issued at the provinces to reconcile them with the figures that are issued at the national office. So in that area, we are seeing progress in terms of the statistics that the provincial authorities are keeping. And through the National Regulators Forum for the liquor authorities, we're able to then coordinate and also analyze those statistics and make sure that the quality of those statistics are okay, to have a sense of how many distributors, how many retailers we have. The interministerial committee that is led by Minister Bathabile Dlamini is looking at various strategies. In that committee, there are all the ministers that are responsible for this area in some way or the other. So that will include the health, from a health perspective, the education, social development, trade and industry, all of the areas that interface with the area of liquor. And Chair, in that committee, there are various decisions that are taken which provide direction in terms of what the department should be doing in the space of regulating the liquor space. And Chair, it is those directions that we are receiving that have also informed the policy review process and also led to the development of the norms and standards to ensure that the regulation of liquor across the country is consistent. What we currently have is that each province has got its own legislation and they have their own requirements, And that is giving a challenge in terms of the enforcement, especially from the side of SAPS. So it becomes problematic that even when they go and raid illegal operations, there isn't much in terms of conviction rate, and there isn't much impact that is made because the laws just do not give sufficient deterrence to operate illegally. So people continue to operate illegally. They keep the fines in the pocket. They know that the fine would be 1,000 rands or so, and they operate. And if you come and you close them down, then they pay the fine, then they continue to operate again. So there is a need to just close that up. And that's what the IMC is currently working on to just close those gaps. Chair, we also are currently looking at the capacity of our inspectorate, but also the capacity of the people that handle applications for liquor licenses. For a whole lot of people in the communities, it is a very daunting process to get a liquor license. A number of them use agencies, like the agents that apply on behalf of people, and the prices vary, you know, from 10,000 to 50,000 for a person to get a liquor license. But actually, the filing fees for getting a liquor license are very, very low in the organizations. But because of maybe the problems around how long it takes and people feel that they need to use the agent, like I said, Chair, when I was talking about the, when we spoke about the CPIC and those people, the runners there, again, in the case of liquor, we have a whole lot of agents, the consultants that are working on behalf of the applicants. So what you also have as a challenge in that space is that for the authorities to communicate with the registrant, they need to communicate to the consultant. And so there isn't much information unless you go to the outlet directly and then you find the person that is actually running the outlet and speak to the person. So, but that area is being improved. There is more engagement with the consultants themselves as well to try and facilitate the communication with the registrants. Chair, I've indicated that there is a need to strengthen the policy council. The policy council is very critical. The nonsense standards that are being developed are touching on the issues which the policy council discussed. These are the issues, for instance, around trading hours. Trading hours need to be consistent across the country. But what you find is that you'll find that trading hours in the Western Cape are different from trading hours in the Eastern Cape. Then you've got challenges around the border line areas for purpose of enforcement. And so the Policy Council has indicated that it will adopt the nonsense standards. And once those nonsense standards are adopted, then they become the national legislation, which should then ensure that all of the provinces adhere to the same types of standards. Just in terms of, as well, in terms of the requirements, the license conditions, some consistency around that so that we don't have barriers to entry in operating a liquor outlet. And you find that in other provinces it's easier because the requirements are very easy. But in other provinces, it's like you are submitting a tender just to actually get a license. You know, it's like you're competing with other people to get a license. So we're trying to make that process very seamless. And in our approaches at DTI, we have indicated that we will ensure that getting into the industry is not going to be too problematic. But once you are found to not operate properly within the industry, then you should be barred from proceeding to operate in that space. So it must be easy for you to enter. It should not be a problem for you to enter, but you must adhere to the rules around how to operate a liquor license, because it is a harmful product. We don't have any challenges with people selling, having their spaza shops, selling food, and oranges and all of that. But with liquor, it is a harmful product. It's got a potential to be addictive. In fact, it is an addictive product in the same way as gambling and lottery. So I think, Chair, this is the complexity that I was talking about around this work, that you actually find yourself having to deal with the nice part of the business where you see the outlets and, you know, people operating a very, very nice, seamless business. You can see the benefits. Families are getting an income, they're getting revenue. But the downside of it is this other area, which is, I think the industry itself should actually also pay attention to it, to say you cannot continue to see that kind of harm that is not mitigated. So the mitigation should be the focus not only of government, but it must be the focus on of the industry itself as the people that put the product into the market. So they must be able to deal with that harm as well. And we have been engaging, especially at the level of manufacturers, we are engaging there in terms of the kind of intervention that can be made, but we should allow the space also for the distributors to also see how they can mitigate that. An example, Chair, just around the distribution, for instance. The distributors would sell to licensed operator. If you're a distributor, you're not allowed to sell to somebody that is not licensed to operate a liquor outlet. So once you're a distributor, you can only sell to another person who has a license to run a tavern or to run a pub or to run. So you find that sometimes there are distributors that might sell directly to the public, which is illegal. The people that should sell directly to the public are the people that have got a provincial license to sell directly to the public. So it's those compliance issues that we also need to focus on, but it is the responsibility of the distributors to ensure that they do not sell to the public, but they sell to the licensed operators. So people often go to outlets such as Makro, for instance. If you get to Makro and people just load a trolley with a lot of alcohol, you don't know where that is going to. So it might be that it's alcohol that is going to land in an illegal tavern or an illegal operation. So you've sold it, but you sold it to a person, and you don't know where that person is taking. So that is the gap that we are engaging the industry in terms of their conditions for their licenses, to make sure that they themselves monitor that. They need to sell to the people that have got a license. And this is an area that I think from a social development point of view has been raised very sharply, Chair, because there are allegations that, in fact, in some locations, one street at night, if you go there, you'll find trucks delivering alcohol at night to some illegal operations and to taverns that do not have licenses. That is what is not acceptable. But if this was done according to how the regulations are, it shouldn't be a concern, really, because then if the distributors are only selling to people that are licensed, then there's no problem. Then the provincial license will deal with how then you sell to those people that are there directly. Chair, these are just some of the figures to show you the threshold to determine, you know, the micro manufacturers and the macro manufacturers, you know, at what level does it go to the province, at what level does it remain a national competence. And there's an issue around methylated spirit as well that is actually being abused, and it's an area that is regulated in terms of the legislation. The other area, Chair, that has been raised from a health perspective as well is the issue of the content of alcohol in products. Some products are like sweets and chocolates, but the level of alcohol content is very high. So that is an area that is also being looked at, just to ensure that the agriculture department and the health department can put some measures around what should be the limitations around that space. Chair, I'm not going to touch on some of the activities. Safe to say that the regulators forum is created to ensure that there is joint enforcement. Honourable McPherson raised an issue around some of the issues that come because of lack of that coordination. So the NLRF was set up specifically, all the regulators, the provincial authorities for liquor, they sit in that, and the SAPS as well forms part of that, so that all of the strategies that are implemented around raids and the blitzes around the across the provinces take place with the police. And there are specific police officers within SAPS that have been appointed in terms of the liquor legislation as inspectors. Because it's not anybody that can just come in and take and confiscate alcohol products from an outlet. So there are specific people that should be doing that, and there are certain processes which will then also improve the rate of conviction, because if it's done by the wrong person, then you take it to court, then they throw it out. So then it doesn't really help us. Chair, I'm just going to just show you this, and the numbers. In terms of distributors, you'll see that the number of distributors has increased, but the large component of it is the distributors that are probably not in operation anymore. So at this point, we are running a process of cancelling the ones that are not in operation anymore. So we have sent letters to them for them to indicate if they're operating. And then if they are not coming back, then we're cancelling those and we send the cancellation letters. And then if they actually are still operating, then we revive their licenses so that they do not have to reapply and start afresh. So the figures should be able to go down soon. But we also have those that operate both as manufacturers as well as distributors. So, but in the country, we have only 14 manufacturers of liquor that are registered. So if there's other operations that are coming up, obviously we will be in a position to update, but so far we only have 14 manufacturers. And then we also have what we call renewals, and we also have alterations within renewals. Sometimes if you have your license, which is limited to a particular address, and you move your premises, you are supposed to alter your license, because the conditions that are put to a licensee are linked to the premises that they operate in, because those premises are supposed to be inspected for certain requirements that are set in terms of the conditions in the license itself. Chair, in terms of just the figures across the provinces, this is a process that I said we've now managed to get it done through the NLRF. We could not get the statistics from the provinces before, and purely because in the provinces, some provinces did not have the statistics. In provinces like Gauteng, at the time they were cleaning the data, it was not possible to see how many operators are there, but now they've managed to actually come to the figures, and they are providing those statistics on a quarterly basis. Chair, in terms of just the processing of the licenses, you will see the figures according to the provinces as well there. You will see that what is received continue to be higher than what is resolved. What is granted, you'll see there in the yellow. So what we get in and what we get out is not necessarily the same. So there probably would be an improvement in that space. But the other reason why, Chair, the figures may look like this is also because the retail licenses at the provinces have got a quicker, a much closer impact on the people and the communities. So there's that process of public hearings that should take place, where the public should say whether they object or they don't object. So that process makes the turnaround time for provincial licenses a bit longer. But it is a necessary process. But I think on an ongoing basis, there should be improvement in that space. And this is just a pie chart that just shows it by color there in terms of what is the profile of the people that are operating in this space in the country. And you'll see that obviously the people that are serving alcohol on the premises are actually more. So we've got more licenses that are operated from the pubs, from the taverns, and so forth. These are the figures around inspections, which are conducted with the police on an ongoing basis. But I must say, Chair, that there are many operators, and the inspections can never be enough. So we rely on the partnership with the communities, with the SAPS, but as well as the authorities, to where they see illegal operations to report them, so that then the police can actually go to them. But the inspections have been improved, and then they are coordinated on a provincial basis. Chair, I think let me just end there, but to indicate that the one thing that is not on this slide, which I think is an omission on our side, Chair, is the issue around our turnaround times in regards to, how long does it take to get a distribution license, for instance. If you apply to the DTI and you say you want a distribution license, how much time should you expect to wait to get something? In the legislation, there wasn't a limitation in terms of the time that we should take, but we have committed ourselves to say that we will come back to you within a period of 90 days. And so we try to measure ourselves against that. You'll find in some instances that it is not 90 days, it's maybe 100 days or 120 days. It will depend. Sometimes you find that the applicant has not submitted, for instance, a zoning certificate for where the operation is going to take place, and then we'll then send a proposal of the conditions subject to them submitting the zoning certificate so that we can then give them the license and we know they are operating in the right space. Then you find that it takes maybe time for them to get a zoning certificate from the municipality. By the time they comply with us, then we have not met the 90 days. But we are committing to ensuring that at least we need to give people licenses within a very short period. And I think for us, 90 days should be a reasonable period, given that previously people used to wait, I think, much, much longer to get licenses. So we'll continue to ensure that we improve around that area and improve around our coordination with the provinces, because that coordination is the one that will help us to deal with these issues. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, DDG. Really appreciate that on the liquor. It's quite true. We've had a lot of complaints about applicants going astray, literally. And it's not something I really have the time to pursue in my office, but I'm glad to hear that you are looking at that. But also there is a need for us, I don't know how this transformation is going in this industry and what is happening there. You know, one seems to be consumed with the societal issues, as one should be. But at the same time, even an industry like alcohol should be transformed. Members, are there any questions, please? Honourable Shorpe Satole, Honourable Shivambu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DDG, for the information. You know, I heard you speaking of this intergovernmental committee that actually prevails. And I don't know whether you could actually alert them that, you see, actually the youth of the country are drowning. Our youth are drowning. You know, in the villages, we put a lot of money, resources on education, but I don't know how we expect to get results when the beans are open 24 hours. When I used to be a student, there was this thing of having to study, having to write homework. Maybe it doesn't exist anymore, I don't know. But I really can't imagine, with the amount of noise, the lack of control of liquor, you go to just a spaza shop, ne? You will be shocked if you run out of airtime and then you just stop. You'll be shocked at the level of young boys and girls coming out of that, jiving, dancing, and obviously not sober, all of them. I think as a country we need to take a serious step and say, yes, we do have the good side of liquor, but from where I'm sitting, I am worried. You know, I'm so worried, Chairperson, that at one time I was just thinking to myself whether we should not, as this fifth parliament, put a moratorium to the sale of liquor. The situation is alarming. When I'm at home, I like, even in the evenings, to deal with my parliamentary work. I can't do that. There's a lot of noise. I can only work when I'm here in parliament. So I think we should come up with a legislation that can really contain that situation. We can't let it go like that. Two, the issue of different provinces having different rules. My understanding is that South Africa is one unitary state, and the center must hold. We can't have a situation where this province is doing this. There is a clause in the Constitution, Chapter 3, that says all spheres of government must conduct their business in a manner that does not divide the Republic of South Africa. I can't look at it now because I'm not having the Constitution, but I know I've read that now. And if people could just look at that thing.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sotoli. Yes, Honourable Shivambu.
Thanks, Chair. Look, there isn't a coherent program on alcohol regulation in South Africa. It's free for all, I mean. And then government must be serious in terms of putting proper instruments and framework in place to deal with that. Because if you look into the Medical Research Council's reports on the destruction of alcohol, the number of deaths that are alcohol-related, it's alarming. If you look into the SAPS reports on the number of crimes that are committed by people who are under the influence of alcohol, I mean, it's more than 40% of domestic violence, all of those people, it's alcohol-related. Rape, assault, all those things. If you look into what the Department of Transport deals with road accidents and alcohol crisis. If you look into dropout from school, productivity levels in the factories, and that relationship to alcohol, it's also a crisis. And there isn't a proper regulatory framework that says this is how alcohol should be distributed and dealt with in South Africa. I think that there should be a very cogent program and legislation that says that we need to actually cut it from where it comes from. Like, we need to reduce those 100 million liters that are given to manufacturer. And the state should make interventions to say, let's limit the amount of alcohol available in society. It's very easy to have access to alcohol in South Africa. In the townships, the most common spaces, it's alcohol outlets. And the pain that is causing the country is too much. So there must be a way of dealing with that more decisively in terms of what happens. And if really the seriousness on the side of the ANC, this is one of the urgent issues that must be looked into. But well, the ANC can be trusted. I mean, they have left all of them here in the committee. Those were direct members. And so we don't know when there's an issue which is supposed to be given proper attention, it's under discussion. So it's one of those things that must be dealt with. I think we need to give proper guidance in terms of what should happen. It must start with reducing the amount of alcohol available in society, and then it should deal with the issues of like proper enforcement of the alcohol regulation laws, and deal with the issues of underage selling and drinking and everything else. Those things of alcohol is not available for people under the age of 18. It's just there. No one implements that thing. Anyway, it's freely available everywhere. It's worse in the townships and it's destroying society in a huge way. So it must be looked into more seriously so that we are able to move forward. Sure.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shivambu. I really think we have got to look at that. I was impressed by the point you made that we can't just leave this with the manufacturers. It's actually got to go down this chain. It has to be a chain of responsibility by all the stakeholders in this regard. And I think these applications I've raised this repeatedly, DDG, that in Alexandra, in Johannesburg, in famous Alexandra, there is, on the East Bank, a school, and I was horrified to go there to establish a library, only to see that opposite was not simply a shabin, but actually was a full-blown bottle store. Now, I understand that because the bottle store was there first and the school came afterwards, in theory, there's nothing until the province can do. Now, I'd like to know exactly what our laws are like, that if establishments like these bottle stores are there, doesn't mean now we've got to rearrange our zoning for schools to suit the bottle store. This is a back-to-front approach. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much, and honourable members for the comments that you've made. I think the comments that have been made actually the sentiment of the IMC, the Interministerial Committee that is led by Honourable Batavile Dlamini, is actually dealing exactly with these issues. One of the things that is key in that is the issue of limiting availability. And limiting availability doesn't start with when it is already at a tavern. It starts from where it comes from the production, distribution, and then to the end. So it's an area that has been integrated. Flowing from the discussions and the resolutions in that committee, previously there were no training hours for distributors, which meant that you can distribute across the clock. So if you can distribute across the clock, it means that availability is unlimited, because if at a particular pub or tavern they run out, you are able to distribute at whatever time. So that was the concern that was being raised. And so since then, there have been regulations that were issued by the minister limiting the trading hours for distributors. So the distributors now do not trade, are not allowed to trade across the clock as well. So that's another important intervention that was done there. But Chair, I must also indicate that there are a number of areas, but I'll only touch on the ones that, in terms of just the instruction and the direction from the IMC, but it's not only because it's from the IMC. Is the issues that are also being advised by the World Health Organization in regard to the space. And I think Honorable Shibambo is right to say that the cost to the society, the cost to the economy is actually enormous. And so it is something, if you look at the figures that were provided before, Chair, in terms of the study that we conducted, but also the studies that were subsequently conducted, although there is contribution of this industry to the economy, the state spends triple more to deal with the consequences in terms of the hospital admissions. If you look at the statistics that are showing you how many are directly related to an alcohol incident, it's a lot of them. So the figures are not lying. They are there because they are monitored at the hospital as the admissions are coming in. But if you look at the report, the accident report on the road, the impact on the Department of Transport is also huge. So what the state is spending is three times more than what the industry is bringing. Hence I said that it cannot be an obligation of government on its own. The industry must also come to the party and indicate what is it that it is willing to do, and where it is not doing enough, government then must put the law to impress on them to do that. So I'm just saying, Chair, that the sentiments that have been expressed by the members are the ones that have been put into the proposed policy. That is also coming, Chair, you know, it's on the parliamentary program. It will be coming to this parliament. So we are looking into those interventions to deal exactly with that. But in the meantime, it is important to continue to improve on the enforcement. It's that reason that more inspectors, SAPS inspectors, have been designated, and it's for that reason that we've increased the capacity around the inspections. there's a lot of people that also, when we did an analysis, because we were concerned 2 years ago, when we started seeing a rise in the application for distribution licenses, because distributors shouldn't be a lot. So when we're looking at the increase, then we then requested our inspection unit to actually, as soon as we receive the application, then we send them to go and inspect the place to see if it's actually a distribution operation. In most of those places, that we found that it's not a distribution outlet. It's actually like a tavern. But because they cannot get, they are still awaiting their retail license from the province, they then will then get a distribution license and operate as a distributor but selling indirectly, undercover to the public. So if the police are not close by, it's actually just an open operation, so anybody can come in. So we did raise this also with the province so that our inspections are coordinated in that way, so that we can deal with the people that are distributors but should not be selling to the people, and they're doing that because that increases the availability of alcohol in the public. But I think I agree that the action around this cannot be like, you know, trick there. There should be a specific approach and a decision that this government is making, because the effect of alcohol, every one of us, we know what the effects are. And in our engagement with the manufacturers, we've also indicated to them that it is not appropriate that we can say that, you know, trade must happen at all costs. There will be limitations. Even the Constitution allows for that limitation. And so that limitation is going to continue. So, and the state must make a decisive, I think, decision around that space. Chair, the one last thing that I wanted to mention around the provincial approach to regulating this, they are equally concerned, but there is also one area around the revenue that comes. So the revenue, sometimes the need to get the revenue for the provinces sometimes overtakes the need to deal with the harm. So because this is like gambling, the revenue that comes from it for the province is big. And so these are the issues. But I'm happy to report, Chair, that the provinces have agreed to the norms and standards. The issue that you are raising around the where the bottle store is at and the school, the rezoning and zoning, those are the issues that now the norms and standards are going to deal with. Because the norms and standards are going to say there shouldn't be any liquor outlet, perhaps let's say a kilometer away, next to the school. So what we have been receiving now, because we've published the norms and standards for public comments, we are seeing a whole lot of suggestions. But strangely, there's still people that want to limit to 500 meters. So now you're saying, no, but 2 kilometers is too far. So again, you need to balance that, but we need to make a decision to say it shouldn't be. So that is the intervention that is happening. Once the norms and standards are adopted, they are going to be coming to this committee to then become the national legislation, so that all the provinces can operate within that one space. So at least the policy council in that space is making progress, and it is aligned directly to what the IMC has raised as a concern. But Chair, this is a very stressful environment. I must say, personally, I think this is a very stressful environment, because when you see the impact that alcohol has on people or gambling. You know, in one time when I was running an interview, it was specifically, I remember, on Lotus FM. I mean, I was depressed after that, because every call that came in was a call from a person that is addicted to gambling, because we were talking about gambling. And everyone who was calling was indicating why government must try and stop this, because they already addicted, they can't help themselves. So then when you leave there, you actually, you are depressed, because you need to balance. But then if the balance is not coming right, then we need to make sure that we make it to come right, because there is serious effects. But we are trying our best to deal with this, and the policy document that will be coming through and the proposed legislative amendments, I think will then help, because they actually are exactly in that direction that the members are raising. So these issues should be addressed going forward, Chair. Thanks.
Right, no, thank you very much. It's much appreciated, DDG. And also for the team staying the course here with you. I know that sometimes these are not seen as economic issues. They are socio-economic issues, and I'm glad this relevance has come out very clearly in today's meeting. Members, just as we close off, the members who may have been in and out of the meeting, and I know that, you know, this does happen, all of us have other commitments, etc. The documents relating to the colloquium around beneficiation will be fine-tuned and available to everyone. But essentially, we are almost linking it to the one in the previous term, but it will now move on and dig a little bit deeper and work around the concept, as I said, of value addition, etc., parity pricing, solutions, possible legislation, and all the mechanisms, and so on and so forth. So we will send members of the committee this two-pager draft as soon as it's fine-tuned. To the department, thank you very much again. Thank you to yourself, Ms. Naidu. And we will be making an, what do you call it, one of these visits. We're not going to arrange it. We're sending an undercover crew to that lot. So, because I see whenever we made a visit, everyone's on their best behavior. And the best time for us to shoot in seems to be around about 2 a.m. in the morning. But thank you once again. Really appreciate members of the committee, those who have the stamina and stay the course, thank you very much indeed as well. We come back on the 19th due to program changes from Parliament on the 19th of August, and we hit the ground running. Okay, you've got these programs, there are one or two little timing errors, and the timing errors have got to do mainly with Fridays. Fridays, an early meeting is 12, and a late meeting is anything between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock. But thank you very much. Enjoy, if you do take 5 days leave, enjoy it, but try and work in the constituencies as well, and try and take the work we are doing here and apply it in your constituency and see what you can do to transform and change lives. Thank you very much. Travel safe. Meeting adjourned till next term, third quarter.